Welcome back. You're listening to Graphite 94.9 FM and English Only with the Doctor. So we are about to embark on a three-week journey together based on the theme of Christmas as you're excitedly, I'm guessing, driving to your next destination to fill the Christmas socks with wonderful Christmas cheer for your family and friends, filled with chocolates and mandarin oranges and who knows what, maybe toothbrushes. In my Christmas tradition when I was living in Canada, we would listen religiously to this wonderful storyteller who passed away in 2017. And he was a radio personality. He had this wonderful radio show on CBC Canada called The Vinyl Cafe. And he would write these stories and incorporate music with it. So this story, the author and the radio personality, his name is Stuart McLean. And he would write these stories about Dave Morley and his two kids. Now, Dave was a proprietor of a shop that sold vinyl records, and his wife was in the theater. And it was all these one story about another, and they were always revolved around music, the music industry, creativity, and it was just fantastic. So as we religiously, as a family, would listen to the Vinyl Cafe on Christmas with my family, we would listen often to his stories about Christmas or the stories that he created about Christmas. And one story after another were always cry your eyes out funny. So for the next 3 weeks, we're going to embark on three stories from his Vinyl Cafe Christmas pack. It's a four-hour CD that you can buy. And I have three stories from this four-hour CD. And they are hilarious. So as we embark on this journey, we'll eventually get some music. So during your drive time, you're going to listen to about 22 to 24 minutes of storytelling by Stuart McLean himself. And thank you very much, CBC Canada and YouTube, for allowing us to download this stuff. And then we'll be followed by some Canadian Christmas music. So thank you very much for your time in advance. And the first story is called, it's funny, it's Ferrets for Christmas. So it's, again, by Stuart McLean. It's a cozy, humorous story about their son who brought ferrets home during the Christmas holidays.
In the middle of December, Sam arrived home from school with a cloth bag slung over his shoulder, 10 years old. "Honey," he called out as the door slapped shut behind him, "I'm home." And then he scrambled up to his room before Morley could say anything. He didn't come down for an hour. Because there were only a few weeks left until Christmas, Morley didn't mention the cloth bag, didn't ask what Sam had been doing in his room with the door shut. This is, after all, a season for secrets. Sam closed his bedroom door behind him the next morning when he left for school. "Promise you won't go in my bedroom," he said. "I promise," said Morley, against her better instincts. Before lunch, Morley went upstairs and stood in front of Sam's door. There was a hand-lettered sign taped to it. "Do not enter. Top secret. This means you." "This means you" was underlined three times. There was a skull and crossbones drawn at the bottom of the page. On Saturday, there was a steady stream of Sam's pals through the room. The kids ever so polite, the door ever so closed. They came and they went and they never said a word. It was driving Morley nuts. But a promise is a promise. On Sunday afternoon, when Sam was at hockey, Morley walked by his room with a load of laundry, and she thought she heard a noise, a scurrying sort of noise. Something was moving in there. Morley pressed her ear against the door, and Stephanie swanned by, her hair wrapped in a towel. "He has the class ferret," she said archly. "The ferret?" said Morley. "Of course, the ferret." And then, promise be damned, Morley opened the bedroom door. Not a wise decision. The ferret was perched on Sam's bedpost, glaring at her. The room smelled like a weasel hole. Morley slammed the door shut and leaned her back against it. They had a family council that night. "It's going back," said Dave. The ferret was sound asleep, draped around Sam's neck like a scarf. "He has a name. His name is Ralph," said Sam, chucking the ferret under the chin. The ferret didn't move. "Because it's dead," said Stephanie. "It smells dead," said Dave. "His name is Ralph," said Sam again peevishly. "No way," said Dave. "No ferrets allowed." He looked at Morley, right? Now, the positions you take on questions of public policy are informed by many things. One of those things is past experience. 2 Decembers ago, Morley organized the Christmas pageant at Sam's school. The principal, Nancy Cassidy, had been more than decent about what had happened that night. Morley didn't especially want a ferret in her house over the holidays, but she felt like she owed the school. She didn't want to be thought of as unreliable. She was sitting opposite Dave, but she was staring at her hands. She said, "It is Christmas, Dave. This is what you do at Christmas, isn't it? You put yourself out. You open your home to people without a place to go." Dave couldn't believe what he was hearing. He pointed at the comatose ferret draped around Sam's neck. "That is not a people," he said. "That is a vermin. There's no room at the inn." Morley smiled ruefully. Couldn't we make a little manger in the basement for Ralph?" she asked. "A manger," said Dave. "A manger? Kenny Wong thinks he has a rat in the basement of his restaurant. Maybe the rat would like to come for Christmas. Maybe we could make a manger for the rat." "Thanks, Dad," said Sam. Dave built a ferret cage in the basement that afternoon. What else could he do? When Sam carried Ralph downstairs, the ferret was still asleep, still draped around his neck. "Do you want to try?" asked Sam. He lifted Ralph off his neck and held him out like a stuffed toy. "He won't wake up." Dave looked at the limp ferret and shook his head. Morley said, "I'll try." Sam positioned the sleeping ferret around his mother's neck. It was lighter than she'd expected, and softer. As the ferret snuggled against her, Morley thought fleetingly that it was too bad you weren't allowed to wear fur anymore. She felt kind of elegant with a ferret around her. She ran her hand self-consciously through her hair. "What do you think?" she asked Dave, striking a pose. "Beautiful," said Dave. "Wait till we get you the rat." Morley passed the ferret back to Sam, and Sam took it downstairs. Galway the cat hissed at them on their way past her dish. Arthur the dog looked away. For 5 years now, Dave and Morley have been sharing the responsibility of Christmas dinner. Morley does the vegetables and the dessert. You know what Dave does. Dave cooks the turkey. Since that infamous Christmas 4 years ago when Dave cooked Butch in the convection oven of the Plaza Hotel, cooking the Christmas turkey has become a big deal for Dave. This year, Dave ordered a turkey from a butcher he'd read about in a local gourmet magazine, a 22-pound, organically raised, free-range bird. "You get a 12-pound bird," said Dave to Morley the afternoon he placed his order, "and all you're paying for is bones and skin and not a whole lot more." He'd driven across town to check the butcher out. "I'm going to marinate it overnight," he said, "in brine. Mikhail told me if we do that, we won't even have to carve it. We'll just have to speak to it firmly and it'll fall apart." "Mikhail," said Morley, "my butcher," said Dave, rubbing his hands together gleefully. It took Ralph the ferret 6 hours to figure out how to open the cage in the basement. Ralph woke just before dawn, had a drink of water and something to eat, and then fiddled with a latch on his cage, and the door swung open. Ralph wandered around the basement for a while, and then he curled up in the pocket of a down ski jacket, which was lying on the floor, and he fell asleep again. Dave came downstairs 2 hours later. He picked the jacket up and threw it in the dryer. He wanted to fluff the down up. He pushed the start button. He walked away. He only got as far as the stairs. There was a thumping coming out of the dryer. The sort of thumping you hear when you try to dry a pair of sneakers. There was a squealing, grinding sound, too. Dave walked back, squatted, and peered through the glass door, and he saw the ferret fly by. Its four paws extended. Looked like one of those cats that you see stuck to the back of car windows. He opened the dryer door. The room was abruptly silent. He peered in. There was no sign of or sound from the ferret. Uh-oh, thought Dave. He stuck his head in the dryer. Not a wise decision. The ferret burst through the door like a wolverine on steroids. All Dave saw was a blur of fur sailing by his face, and then absolutely nothing. He looked around, the ferret was gone. Everyone joined the search. They looked everywhere, but as far as they could see, the house was ferretless. There was a vacancy of ferrets, a ferret void. As far as ferrets were concerned, there was nothing. Naught, zero. Goose egg, zilch, sweet Fanny Adams. The ferret was more than gone, it was all gone. Don't worry, said Dave, I'm sure he'll come back. Not certain where Ralph would come back, Morley spent an hour the next morning taping ferret warnings around the house. Check for ferret, it said on the oven and the washing machine and the dryer. Ferret check, it said on the toaster oven and the microwave and the stereo. By the end of the week, checking for the ferret had become an unconscious reflex. Before she turned on the oven, Morley would rattle the door. Ferret, ferret, ferret. Morley was terrified that she might have to return Sam to school after the holidays with a dead ferret stuck under his arm. Which, said Dave, would be a darn sight better than not finding the body. Morley was the first to spot Ralph. She saw him on the weekend. Well, she didn't really see him. What she saw was a flash of fur in her peripheral vision. I'm pretty sure it was Ralph, she said. It was definitely fur. From that moment, their days were punctuated with glimpses of fur on the fly. They'd go into a room and turn on a light, and they wouldn't as much see as they would sense the vanishing ball of fur. The ferret was moving through their house like a trout swimming up a stream. They saw flashes of him and the occasional ripple on the surface, but that was all. At night, they'd be lying in bed and they'd hear scurry, 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 smash. And they'd get up and they'd go downstairs and the Christmas tree would be swinging wildly back and forth. And there'd be an assortment of ornaments lying on the ground. 3 mornings in a row, Morley came down and found someone had been digging in the pot of her eucalyptus tree. The dirt flung all over the hall. The first time this happened, Arthur the dog saw her coming and began to back away. Almost holding up his paws as if to say, it wasn't me. The week before Christmas, Dave had an idea. I have an idea, he said. If I knew where it slept, I could get it. I was thinking I could track it to its den. You could track it to its den, said Morley. If it left tracks, said Dave. That night when everyone was in bed, Dave went downstairs and he took the flour sifter and he sprinkled icing sugar over the kitchen floor. It was such satisfying work that he did the hallway and the dining room too. And when he'd finished, the house looked pleasingly seasonal, as if there'd been a light dusting of snow. He slept fitfully and he ran downstairs at 6:30 the next morning and he opened the kitchen door full of hope, and there was Arthur licking the last bit of sugar off the floor. Arthur looked at him, burped, took two unsteady steps, vomited, and fell over. That was the night that Morley said, I think the ferret is pregnant. It was supper time. Dave stared at her blankly. I can just tell, said Morley. You can just tell, said Dave. Mothers know these things, said Morley. These things about a ferret, said Dave. I saw him yesterday. He's getting bigger. He took one of my oven mitts. I think he's making a nest. Sam, who had been listening with growing dismay, said, excuse me, Ralph can't have babies. Men can't have babies. It was more a question than a statement of fact. Can they? He said it in a small voice, his hand moving unconsciously towards his stomach. The next morning, Morley was cleaning Sam's bedroom and she came across a crumpled letter from his school. She took it downstairs and smoothed it out on the kitchen table. Thought you'd like to see this, she said to Dave. There was a brochure attached to the letter. The brochure was called Caring for Your Ferret. Dave began on page 3, Finding a Lost Ferret. The first place to look for your lost ferret, said the brochure, is in places the ferret couldn't possibly go. They love little holes, crawl around on your stomach and look for holes in the floor, under cabinets. It's living in our walls, said Dave. No way, said Morley. You aren't cutting any holes in the walls. I wasn't even thinking of that, said Dave. He took the brochure into the living room and sat down. There was a paragraph called Missing Objects. Ferrets love to swipe things and drag them into the most inaccessible location possible. Protect your keys and wallet, or you'll always be missing them. Hey, said Dave, maybe we've had a ferret for years. Maybe you have a ferret. It was like living with a poltergeist. One night, Dave and Morley were watching the news on television when a plastic shopping bag humped its way quickly through the room. Another night, a creature with a body of fur and the head of a cardboard toilet paper tube careened by them, bouncing off the furniture and walls before it disappeared down the hall. You never knew what was going to happen next. Galway the cat began licking her paws neurotically. Arthur wouldn't stay in a room by himself. He whined incessantly if anyone tried to leave him home alone. And then it was quiet. No one saw Ralph in the days before Christmas. I'm worried, said Sam at supper. On the morning of Christmas Eve, Dave went into the basement to prepare the turkey marinade. He'd got a new plastic garbage pail for the job. And he wrestled the turkey into the brine and he came upstairs glowing. This, he said, is going to be the best ever. After lunch, he went and picked up Morley's mother, Nancy. Nancy was going to spend Christmas with them. Nancy was waiting in the apartment lobby with her coat on and two bags of presents at her feet. She was wearing a hat with a net veil and a fur stole. I found it in the attic when I moved, she said. Roy gave it to me for Christmas the year we were married. When they got there, Dave hung the stole on the coat rack by the front door. After supper, he got the turkey out of the basement and brought it upstairs. He put it in the kitchen sink to drain. They had torchiere for dinner. And after they finished it, everyone disappeared to their rooms to wrap presents. Nancy sat on the couch listening to carols with Arthur snuggled beside her as one by one the family drifted downstairs to put their parcels under the tree. Dave was coming downstairs with the camera when something fell over in the kitchen. Dave, who was heading for the tree, changed directions. He flung the kitchen door open, and there was Ralph, the missing ferret, perched on the back of Dave's 22-pound marinated turkey. He had the drumstick in his mouth. He looked like a painting by Robert Bateman. The ferret stared at Dave. Neither of them moved. And then the ferret burped. In his shock, Dave snapped a picture. You're right, Morley will say in January when they get the film developed. It does look like a Bateman. But they won't get the film developed for weeks. On Christmas Eve, when she came into the kitchen and Morley saw the gnawed carcass, it didn't look like art to her. It looked like another Christmas down the drain. She felt a wave of despair wash over her. Family gathered around the sink like they were gathering around a grave. Sam was amazed. "Look how much he ate," he said. Stephanie pushed Sam away from the sink. "You can even see the wishbone," she added. Everyone turned and looked at Dave. His pride and joy, his carefully marinated delicacy, was ruined. They expected an explosion. "Nothing to worry about," said Dave with exaggerated calmness. "I know where we can get a turkey." "On Christmas Day," said Morley. "No," said Dave, "tonight." "It'll be frozen solid," said Morley. "You could thaw a turkey in no time if you know the right technique," said Dave. "How does he know that?" said Stephanie. "I've lived a long life," said Dave. On Christmas morning, they didn't wake until 8 o'clock. "I can't believe it," said Dave, "sleeping in on Christmas." They actually had to wake Sam up. They opened their stockings upstairs, and at 9:15, they headed down the stairs in a line, Morley in the lead, the kids following, Dave bringing up the rear. Morley was halfway down the stairs when she stopped unexpectedly. "Uh-oh," she said. Sam bumped into Morley. Stephanie bumped into Sam. Dave bumped into Stephanie. "Uh-oh," thought Dave. Dave couldn't see the living room. Couldn't see Arthur and Ralph the ferret snuggled together at the base of the tree. Galway curled up not a foot away. Couldn't see the nest of shredded Christmas paper between them and the trio of mewling ferret babies. "Four," said Morley, pointing to the baby everyone had missed, the ferret that had climbed onto Arthur's back and was lying there sucking gently on the dog's ear. It was maybe the best Christmas ever. Everyone so taken with the ferret babies that they had to keep reminding one another to open presents. The house filled with a sense of peace and great goodwill. Ralph was back, and clearly she was here to stay. Sam could return triumphantly to school with her and her brood. After dinner, they sat around the tree and sang carols and watched the baby ferret nuzzling Arthur. Ralph had disappeared, but no one seemed to mind, least of all Arthur. At 10 o'clock, Nancy said she had to go. Dave was lying on the couch in a post-dinner stupor. He struggled to get up, but Nancy said, "Don't get up, I've called a taxi." Dave watched from the couch as she kissed Sam goodbye. "Now don't get ahead of me." He watched Nancy hug Morley. He watched her blow a kiss to Stephanie and get into her coat and hat and pick up her fur muffler off the coat rack and drop it around her neck. Dave squinted at her and struggled to get up, but his body wouldn't respond. He tried to say something. He tried to say, "That's not your fur muffler, Nancy." but no sound came out of his mouth. All he was able to do was lie on the couch and watch in horror as Nancy reached into her purse and brought out the large gold brooch she used to hold her stolen place. Good night. Which is when the ferret sneezed. Or as far as Nancy was concerned, her fur stole sneezed. Nancy looked at her stole. Her stole was looking back at her. Nancy blinked. Her stole blinked back. She screamed and jumped in the air. And Ralph, who could see the brooch heading towards her belly, scrambled down Nancy's leg and ripped out of the room like a bat out of hell. She didn't come back at all that night. But there was only so much Arthur could do to supplicate the quartet of mewling ferret babies. Ralph sulked back to feed the kits the next day. They were all happily ensconced in the cage in the basement. Dave took the lock off the door, and Ralph was free to come and go as she pleased. On the Tuesday morning after New Year's, Morley will drive Sam to school. The family of ferrets will travel in a cardboard box on the back seat. When they arrive, Sam will carry the box regally into his classroom. Morley will see him on his way, but by the time he's opening the box, she'll be sitting on the bench in front of the principal's office. When she's finally ushered in, Morley and Nancy Cassidy will have a heated discussion about ferret gestation periods. After they finish, Morley will make her way to Sam's classroom, but she'll find the door closed and she will not knock. So she will not know what an impression Ralph and his three babies made on the grade six class. She'll go home and spend the rest of the morning at her desk, and only after lunch, when she goes upstairs to get a sweater, will she notice the sign on Sam's closed door. Do not enter. Top secret. This means you.
That was just hilarious. I was crying. I don't know. I've heard these stories repeatedly since I was quite young. Every Christmas, and I still find them hilarious. I don't think that I'll ever get tired. I even have received, I like them so much, I've received books for Christmas from my father. Anything written by Stuart MacLean is a certain, for anybody who likes reading short stories, like they're about 25 pages each. And there's a beginning, middle, and end, which is really nice because you can you know, do half an hour of reading and it's done. But they are hilarious. It's really very funny. So Stuart MacLean, as we listen to Graphite 94.9 FM in English Only with a Doctor, and I continue with this series, and we're going to get into the music section right away. But I wanted to give you a little bit of information on Stuart MacLean. For decades during December, he toured across Canada with this special Christmas themed shows. And as you just heard, this was a live recording. Tune in next week. You'll get another version of a different story by the same author. It will be, what is it? What do I have on my list? It's Dave Actually Cooks the Turkey. It is hilarious. It made me cry. That said, so we're going to move to Stopping Tom Connors, and he is a legendary Canadian figure in folk music, country singer, known for writing songs about everyday Canadian life, and they're quite funny. One of the astute things about Stomping Tom Connor was that he would stomp his foot. That's why he's called Stomping Tom. He'd stomp his foot on the ground on the stage, and apparently it was for a joke, but I don't know if that's really true. This is from his album, Merry Christmas, Everybody. This is Stompin' Tom Connors on Graphite 94.9 English, Only with the Doctor.
Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year, too. May your holidays be merry and every wish come true. May you always be remembered by those so dear to you. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Well, there's old Grandpappy, and he sure looks happy with Granny just a-slapping her knees. There's old Aunt Mary with funny Uncle Harry, and they're trying to give the baby a squeeze. There's long-lost cousins, kitties by the dozens, and they're gonna stay the whole day long. Get together now, friends and neighbors, sing a happy holiday song. Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year, too. May your holidays be merry and every wish come true. May you always be remembered by those so dear to you. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Turkey's on the table now, and when you're feeling able, you can take another helping if you will. But soon as you eat it, I'm afraid you gotta beat it, 'cause you gotta give the chair to Brother Bill. And hey, Uncle Marty, it's an all-night party, and don't you pour the drinks too strong. Get together now, friends and neighbors, sing a happy holiday song. Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year, too. May your holidays be merry and every wish come true. May you always be remembered by those so dear to you. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through.
That was really upbeat, and you can kind of hear in your head the stomping of his foot on the stage. Dun, dun, dun. The next one on the list is Celine Dion. Now, I don't think that she needs very much introduction. I think everybody on the planet knows who she is. I don't play her very often. I might have played her three times in the last 3 years. Not because I don't think she's a phenomenal vocalist. She really, really is. And not because I don't think she's a fantastic human being. I think she epitomizes what I love about Canada. The vivaciousness, the always positive attitude, the resilience, and just this, this ability to accommodate not just one particular culture, but many cultures, because I find that she's an eclectic human being. I don't know. She reminds me a lot of one of my aunts, to be honest. That said, I don't play her a lot because I find that her music is always very similar, and it's not really my vibe. But this particular song, her voice is phenomenal, and it pierces your heart with joy and Christmas spirit. It just pierces your heart in general. She's got a phenomenal voice. So this is Christmas by Celine Dion. It's not her original work, but it's how she made this rendition. I hope you enjoy it.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas, I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good without any fear.
You're listening to Graphite 94.9 FM in English Only with a Doctor, and we are embarking on our 3-week dedication to Christmas. The next song, it is a very particularly historical song for Canadians. It is known as the oldest song, is it the oldest song? It was written in the 1600s, so I think they mark it as the oldest historical and heritage song, Christmas song known in Canada, originally written in the 17th century. So it was written, like I said, it was written in to 1642. Let me see where did I put that information? Here it is. In 1642. Oh, yes. By the Jesuit missionary Jean de Brébeuf, in the language of the Huron and the Wadat people. So what's really interesting about this is it has a traditional French-Canadian melody, and the imagery in the music is not what you would consider like traditional Christian imagery, but it's imagery that is to reflect the people's belief at the time. So it's a really lovely song. It's quite long, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get through all my set today, so I'll stop talking as much as I can. This is called the Huron Carol.
Chrétiens, prenez courage, Jésus Sauveur est né. Du malin les ouvrages à jamais sont ruinés. Quand il chante merveilleux à ses troublants appâts, ne prêtez plus l'oreille, Jésus est né. In excelsis gloria. Was in the moon of winter time when all the birds had fled, that mighty Gitche Manitou sent angel choirs instead. Before their light the stars grew dim, and wandering hunters heard the hymn, Jesus your King is born, Jesus is born, in excelsis gloria. Cette nouvelle dont un ange est porteur, voyez âme fidèle et dilatez vos cœurs. La Vierge dans l'étable entoure de ses bras l'enfant Dieu adorable, Jésus est né, in excelsis gloria. Within a lodge of broken bark, the tender babe was found, a ragged robe of
rabbit skin and wrapped his beauty round. And as the hunter braves drew nigh, the angel's song rang loud and high. Jesus, your king is born. Jesus is born in excelsis gloria.
In excelsis gloria.
Voici que trois rois mages perdus en Orient déchiffrent ce message écrit au firmament. L'astre nouveau les hante, ils la suivront là-bas. C'était toi le marchand, Jésus est né, in excelsis gloria.
In excelsis gloria.
The earliest moon of winter time is not so round and fair as was the ring of glory on the helpless infant there. The chiefs from far before him knelt with gifts of fox and beaver pelt. Jesus, your king is born. Jesus is born in excelsis gloria.
That is just beautiful. I was impressed. And so when I spoke earlier about it being, the imagery was a little bit different. Like he was talking about the moon and the sun and nature and animals. And I thought that was just a fantastic song. I've never heard this song in my life before. So we're discovering it together outside of when I picked it. The next song on the list is Corey Hart. So who is Corey Hart? Corey Hart was like a heartthrob when I was a teenager, and he sang this sunglasses at night thing. Fell off the music world of existence. He did some songs after that, but he wasn't very popular for very, very long. But this is a song from Corey Hart, a more recent one, and it's called Another December.
Thank you.
So like I said, Corey Hart, he kind of left the music scene for a little while. Apparently he moved abroad with his family, and on coming back, this is part of his debut album, Another Christmas. It was dedicated to his mother, who passed away in 2014, and there's a significant memory that he has about his concerts when he was playing in Canada during specifically the month of December, because apparently she would bring hot chocolate to fans who were waiting or listening to the music to keep them warm at night. And I think this is a very beautiful homage to people who've passed. Christmas time is filled with family and all these traditional memories and emotions and expectations. And when we experience a loss during the year, times like Christmas, we feel that loss a little bit differently. For those of you or listeners or any listeners or any people that you know outside of you, inside of your periphery, that have lost somebody in 2025, a special sense of warmth or my affection or my love goes out to you, because I know that that can be really difficult. If there's any advice, I can't give any advice because I'm not a therapist, but I know what I've done is I've written people who've passed in the year letters to them while I was reflecting upon them during the Christmas season, burnt the letter, or, you know, just done something specifically just for them, what's something that they might have liked, like make them baked a cookie that they particularly liked or a plate of food that they particularly liked, so I could enjoy it with them in my mind and heart, even though they weren't there in spirit, in physical presence. That said, the next song, this is not at all related. The next song on the list is Sum 41. So who is Sum 41? Sum 41 is a Canadian pop rock band from Ajax, Ontario. And they're still playing over 3 decades. I think that one of the members of Sum 41, yeah, he married Avril Lavigne, who is also a Canadian alternative rock singer who now lives in the United States. And in their inclusion in this Christmas playlist or holiday theme song brings a different kind of energy, a punk or alternative twist. So we have a couple of songs like that on the list today. We have the Kinks that follow after this one, and that'll be our last song. So as we approach the end, I'm going to encourage you to enjoy this wonderful Unwritten Law by Sum 41. I believe it's from the 2000s. And Christmas is not just about traditional Christmas songs and Christian faith, I don't think. I think that like the Heron song that we listened to, the Heron Carol song that we listened to just earlier, it is also about people and their belief systems. So enjoy, and I'll talk to you in just a few minutes. That was Sum 41 with Unwritten Law, and it was just fantastic. I love it. It was so wonderful. So the next song on the list is The Kinks. They are not Canadian. They are from Scotland, I think. Let me take a look. The Kinks, what did I write about the Kinks? It's a song called Father Christmas, and they are a British band. And it gives a bit of another kind of like idea of alternative rock, and I really, really enjoy it. It's slightly iconic or rebellious, and it's just a nice twist and contrast to what our traditional music is. So as I leave you for this week, I encourage you to come back next week for Dave Cooks the Turkey, our story for at the beginning of our next session. And have a very merry weekend and Christmas shopping from my heart to yours, English only with the doctor on Graph Hit 94.9 FM and English only with the doctor.
Beat you up, so don't make it so-